Hi, I'm Matthew. 2 years ago, my world fell apart when my wife Claire died in a car accident, leaving me to raise our daughter Emma alone. Those first months were a blur of grief counseling, bedtime tears, and learning how to be both mom and dad to a heartbroken 10-year-old. Daddy, do you think mommy can see us from heaven? Emma would ask, her big brown eyes glossy with tears. I bet she's watching right now, probably telling us to stop eating so much pizza for dinner, I'd say, which usually made her smile. Life settled into a rhythm: work, school, homework, and our Friday movie nights. Then, at Emma's school fundraiser, I literally bumped into Victoria. Oh gosh, I'm so sorry about your shirt, she said, frantically dabbing at the coffee stain on my button-down. It's fine, really. This old thing has survived worse with a 12-year-old at home. Victoria smiled, and something inside me woke up for the first time in years. She was beautiful, sure, but it was her warmth that pulled me in. Emma, this is Victoria. Victoria, this is my daughter, Emma. Your dad has told me so much about you. I hear you're quite the artist, Victoria said, kneeling to Emma's level. Emma looked at her suspiciously. You don't look like the kind of person who likes zombie drawings. Victoria laughed. Are you kidding? Zombies are the best. I'd love to see your work sometime. Just like that, Emma was sold. Our first dates always included Emma, and Victoria never seemed to mind. 6 months later, Victoria moved in, and life felt almost normal again. Can Victoria come to my science fair? Emma asked one morning. I want her to see my project. Of course, sweetie, she wouldn't miss it. Things were good until they weren't. It started with stomach aches. My tummy hurts again, Dad, Emma said one night after dinner. Maybe it's just a bug going around school, Victoria suggested, stroking Emma's hair. I'll make you some of my special tea. But the stomach aches became more frequent. Then came the vomiting and fatigue. Kids pick up everything at school, our family doctor said, prescribing an antacid. 3 different doctors, and 4 weeks later, Emma wasn't getting better. She was getting worse. Matthew, I'm worried, Victoria said, her face a perfect mask of concern. Maybe we should take her to a specialist. That's how we met Dr. Patel, a pediatric gastroenterologist with kind eyes and a gentle manner. Has Emma been under any unusual stress lately? She asked during our third visit. Nothing out of the ordinary, I said. She's always been a happy kid. She's been so brave through all this, Victoria added, squeezing my hand. Then came the night I found Emma unconscious on her bathroom floor. Her skin was clammy, her breathing shallow. Emma, baby, wake up! I screamed, scooping her up. I'll get the car, Victoria said, surprisingly calm. In the emergency room, doctors swarmed around my little girl while I stood helpless, watching machines track her failing vitals. Mr. Walker? A doctor approached, his expression grave. We need to admit Emma immediately. Her symptoms suggest some kind of poisoning. As they wheeled my daughter away, I caught a glimpse of Victoria's face. For just a split second, beneath her concerned expression, I could have sworn I saw something else, something that made my blood run cold. 3 days in the hospital, and Emma's condition kept deteriorating. Her skin had yellowed, and she barely had strength to sit up. Her liver function is concerning, the doctor explained. We're still trying to determine the cause. Victoria barely left the hospital, constantly bringing food from home despite the dietary restrictions. I made chicken soup for Emma, she said, setting a thermos on the table. The doctors want her on a controlled diet right now. Something flashed across Victoria's face. Annoyance. Of course, whatever's best. Later, I returned from a call to find Victoria feeding Emma from the thermos. What are you doing? I told you she's on a restricted diet. It's just soup, Matthew. She needs proper nutrition to recover. That night, Dr. Patel pulled me into the hallway after checking Emma. I've been reviewing her case. This presentation is unusual for any common illness. What are you saying? I'd like to run specific toxicology tests, ones we don't typically order. My stomach dropped. You think someone's poisoning my daughter? In my experience, I've seen cases where symptoms improved when certain caregivers weren't present. Are you suggesting Victoria? I'm not suggesting anything specific, but there's a syndrome called Munchausen by proxy, where someone intentionally makes another person ill for attention or sympathy. That's insane. Victoria loves Emma. Just consider who has access to Emma's food and medicine. Watch for patterns. When Victoria went to the cafeteria, I checked her laptop. The browser history made my blood freeze. Untraceable poisons, symptoms of arsenic poisoning. How long does antifreeze poisoning take? I slammed it shut, hearing footsteps approach. Everything okay? Victoria asked, offering coffee. Fine, just tired. That night, I called my sister from the parking lot. Sarah, can you stay with Emma tomorrow? Don't tell Victoria. What's going on, Matt? I need to set up cameras at home. I think Victoria might be hurting Emma. The silence stretched before Sarah finally spoke. I'll be there at 8. The next day, I installed tiny cameras in our kitchen, Emma's bedroom, and the bathroom medicine cabinet. By evening, I returned to the hospital, my phone set to receive alerts. At 10:43 p.m., my phone buzzed. Victoria had gone home an hour earlier to freshen up. The kitchen footage showed her pulling a small, unlabeled vial from her purse. She opened Emma's favorite yogurt and carefully added drops from the vial, stirring thoroughly before returning it to the fridge. My hands trembled as I watched her deliberately poison my little girl. My first instinct was to confront Victoria immediately, but something stopped me. If I tipped my hand too soon, she might destroy evidence or worse, find another way to hurt Emma. I needed a real plan. The next morning, I greeted Victoria with a kiss when she arrived at the hospital. "How's our girl doing today?" she asked, setting down her bag with that poisoned yogurt inside. "Still weak, but the doctors say she might come home soon." Her eyes widened slightly. "Really? That's wonderful news." I nodded, watching her carefully. "Dr. Patel thinks she's stabilizing. They just need to run a few more tests." After Victoria left to grab coffee, I immediately grabbed the yogurt container and called Dr. Patel. "I have evidence, actual evidence on video. She's adding something to Emma's food." "Bring the yogurt to the lab immediately and call the police." That afternoon, I met with Detective Rivera, a no-nonsense woman with sharp eyes who reviewed the footage on my phone. "This is disturbing, but not conclusive for court. We need more." "More? She's poisoning my daughter." "And we'll nail her, but we need an airtight case. No defense attorney can create reasonable doubt." I paced the small conference room. "What do you need?" "Financial motive, pattern of behavior, and catching her in the act." My sister Sarah came through with the first piece. She'd been digging into Victoria's background. "Matt, she took out a life insurance policy on Emma 3 months ago. $500,000. "What? How could she even do that?" "You added her as Emma's legal guardian on your work benefits after you got engaged. Remember, she used that paperwork." "And there's more," Sarah continued. "I found a news article about a boyfriend she had 5 years ago. His son mysteriously fell ill. The boyfriend died in a car accident before anything was proven." I felt sick. "She's done this before." Detective Rivera nodded grimly when I shared this information. "Now we need to catch her red-handed. We'll need Dr. Patel's help." We devised the plan in Dr. Patel's office. The lab had identified antifreeze in the yogurt. Ethylene glycol poisoning explained Emma's symptoms perfectly. "Here's what we'll do," Detective Rivera explained. "We'll tell Victoria that Emma is being discharged tomorrow. She'll almost certainly try to prepare something to take home." "We'll have officers monitoring the cameras we've installed," she continued. "As soon as she adds anything to food or medicine, they'll move in." "What about Emma's safety?" I demanded. "Emma won't actually be discharged," Dr. Patel assured me. "This is just to prompt Victoria to act where we can catch her." That night, I sat beside Emma's bed, watching her sleep. She looked so small, so vulnerable. "Daddy?" she murmured, half awake. "When can we go home?" "Soon, sweetie. Very soon." "Is Victoria coming to see me today?" I swallowed hard. "Yes, she'll be here." Emma smiled weakly. "She always brings me special treats." Those words chilled me to the bone. The next morning, I called Victoria with the good news. "Dr. Patel says Emma can come home tomorrow. Can you believe it?" "That's wonderful." Her voice sounded genuinely happy. "I'll prepare everything at home. Her favorite foods, fresh sheets. Actually, could you bring her favorite pudding when you come tonight? She was asking for it." "Of course, anything for our girl." As I hung up, Detective Rivera nodded approvingly. The trap was set. Victoria arrived at the hospital that evening clutching a small cooler bag. "I made Emma's favorite chocolate pudding," she announced, setting it on the bedside table, "and I added extra whipped cream, just how she likes it." "You're so thoughtful," I said, forcing a smile. "Emma's resting now, but I'm sure she'll want some when she wakes up." "I'll just put it in the family refrigerator down the hall until she's ready. Actually, why don't you leave it here? The nurse can put it in their station fridge." A flicker of unease crossed her face. "I'd rather keep it cold properly. Hospital fridges are so unreliable." "I insist." For a moment, tension crackled between us. Then Victoria smiled tightly. "Fine, whatever you think is best." The moment she left for the bathroom, I texted Detective Rivera. She brought it. Pudding with something in it. 20 minutes later, Victoria's phone rang. She stepped out to take the call, and within seconds, Detective Rivera and two officers appeared in the doorway. "Is that the pudding?" she asked, pointing to the cooler. I nodded, heart pounding. They were waiting when Victoria returned. Her face drained of color when she saw the officers. "Victoria Jenkins, we're taking you into custody for questioning regarding the attempted murder of Emma Walker." "This is ridiculous," she sputtered. "Matthew, tell them this is a mistake." I stood up slowly. "They found antifreeze in the yogurt you prepared yesterday. What's in the pudding, Victoria?" Her expression changed, morphing from shock to something cold and calculating. "You have no proof of anything." "Actually, we do," Detective Rivera said, holding up her phone, showing the camera footage. "Multiple instances of you adding substances to food intended for Emma." They took her away in handcuffs, still protesting her innocence. 2 weeks later, Emma was fully recovered and back home. We'd moved temporarily into Sarah's house while our place was being sold. I couldn't bear to live there anymore. "The DA is confident," Sarah said, as we watched Emma playing in the backyard. "They found evidence linking her to her ex-boyfriend's death, too. The insurance policy was the smoking gun. Did she really think she'd get away with it?" She almost did, twice. 6 months later, I sat in the courtroom as the jury delivered their verdict, guilty on all counts. "Victoria Jenkins, you are hereby sentenced to 30 years imprisonment without possibility of parole for the attempted murder of Emma Walker and the murder of Daniel Kovach." As they led her away, Victoria locked eyes with me. "I loved you, Matthew. I would have been the perfect wife. You'll never hurt another family again," was all I said. 1 year later, Emma and I celebrated her 14th birthday in our new home. She was thriving again, straight-A student, soccer team captain, and most importantly, healthy. "Dad, Aunt Sarah's here," Emma called from the front door. "She brought that giant ice cream cake." "Coming," I smiled, watching my daughter alive, safe, and happy. Meanwhile, in a maximum security women's prison 300 miles away, Victoria stared at the concrete walls of her cell. Her cellmate had taped up newspaper clippings about her case as a sick joke. The headline glared back at her, "Black Widow Poisoner Gets 30 Years." The guards had circulated her story. Even among criminals, someone who would poison a child was considered the lowest of the low. No one ever visited her. No one ever would. What would you have done if you were in Matthew's position? Would you have gathered evidence methodically like he did? Or would you have confronted Victoria immediately after seeing the video of her poisoning Emma's food? Some might say Matthew put Emma at further risk by waiting to trap Victoria properly, while others would argue his patience ensured she faced real justice instead of potentially escaping punishment. What's your take? If you enjoyed this revenge story where justice was served cold, hit that like button and subscribe for more stories about toxic people getting exactly what they deserve. Share your thoughts in the comments below.